Live from the backstretch at historic Saratoga Racecourse, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow. Racing Across America is brought to you by Pennell's Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922. 284 Jefferson Street, Saratoga, just minutes from the track. And the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. When you can't make it to the track, make it to the Clubhouse Racebook.
Good morning and welcome to Racing Across America as we kick off week number five. That's not really a kickoff. As we swing into week number five, crossing the halfway point, and it's another beautiful day up here. Nice little breeze, sunny. If you're thinking about coming up, make it up here. Don't forget, if you can't make it up, players bankroll at the Clubhouse Racebook today. That's always a lot of fun. Go down and see if you can get on the bankroll team. Otherwise, a little bit later on the show, she's in the house, Nicole Russo. We'll talk a little sales from the past couple of nights with Nicole. Writes about the breeding side of the game for the DRF. A little bit later on, speaking of writing, Jennifer Kelly will join us. She did the Sir Barton book, The Foxes of Bel Air, Gallant Fox in Omaha. We'll talk a little bit about the books and more. Keith Augustine will join us, Lazy Dog Cookie Company with Kim Weir. The pet treats have turned into horse treats or additionally horse treats. So if you have a horse, we'll talk a little bit about those, which benefit the TRF, the sales of the horse treats. So that's coming up. But top of the show, as usual on a Wednesday, the rotation from the Saratoga Special. And this morning, it's our friend Sean Clancy. Sean, good morning.
Good morning. Good to be here. Beautiful day, like I said.
Happy to have you on board. And I'll start out just because it was a tough week in Saratoga. Friday, races got canceled. Saturday, the situation in the test. Sunday, there was all kinds of things going on. But I said to you, and I have talked to a number of people over the past couple of days, I said to you as we were getting ready, nice job on the test recap, because we came in the next day and it was tough to kind of address that. And then how do you segue into something else? But your recap of the test acknowledged the winner, but you talked to all the right people. And I think the emotion of the day was reflected well.
Anybody who was here, anybody has any empathy or soul, that was disturbing. I mean, it was just a crushing moment to see that happen. I wrote in the story, the feel-good of all feel-good stories just crashes right in front of you. It's tough. I mean, for us, it was like I was actually covering the Whitney. I walked down to the winner's circle. It took me, when it happened, I wasn't covering the race. I kind of took a – I like was kind of stunned like everybody. I really didn't know what to do. And then I walked down to the winner's circle, and it was Paul Halloran, who's a great writer and has contributed immensely to the special. He was covering the test, and Tom Wall was there, and kind of looked at each other, and I had watched Brendan Walsh and Tyler Gaffney walked out of the winner's circle, and I thought, I'll just kind of track them and see where this goes. And obviously Brendan was shook up, and I had this moment of Brendan kind of stuttered out a bit of a quote or statement. It wasn't a statement, it was just kind of a heartfelt few sentences to Dave Granning and another comrade, and I was kind of standing there, and Brendan started walking through the crowd, and I just thought to myself, like, I didn't really think anything. I just went with him, basically, and you don't want to glamorize being a turf rider. It's kind of a ridiculous occupation, but there was that moment of, like, yeah, this is in my hands. I better, I got it. And I kind of looked around and felt like I knew Paul Halloran. He doesn't know Brendan Walsh like I know Brendan Walsh, and it was just a moment of, like, okay, this is in my lap. And I was lucky in a way. I mean, I think all of us were lucky in a way. It was Brendan Walsh was the winning trainer, if you could possibly use that word. And Brendan was just beautiful. He's very heartfelt, and I knew Brendan would allow me to go with him and allow me to use what he said, and it turned into just a very, I thought it was just a, I mean, it was so completely natural, and people were just, I mean, the dismay and distraught in the backside. I mean, the look on Dave Duggan's face and Mirkan Katarmanci's face. I mean, it just the grooms and the everybody. We just were all so, just devastated. Yeah. I mean, just so stunned. We're a resilient group because we're in this game, but That one just that just took you to your knees.
I said the next day, it's a game of emotions. The highest of highs and the lowest of lows. But I've never experienced going from one to the other in a split second like that.
Yeah, just, I mean, no, exactly. I mean, it was just to see that to with the story. I mean, Melanie and the Philly and the moment and Bill Parcells and the, you know, undefeated Philly doing that. It's just, I mean, you just, yeah, it was just, I've never seen one like that. I've never been rocked like that. I mean, I've been on their back when things have happened, and it was just a very disturbing, distressing, devastating moment for all of us. And our heart just goes out to the Philly and her connections, and it's tough.
You know, you mentioned Brendan Walsh. I should have. Folks can go to Skip Nick Stein's Twitter. He has a great picture, and then the next day, there was no winner circle ceremony. There was no pictures, and Brendan said he had to scout down the blanket of flowers, but he took the blanket of flowers over and gave it to Melanie, which I thought was a great gesture.
Yeah, and I think as a sport, I mean, I think the individual people in the sport, to see them step up and handle a situation like that with such decorum and such class and such just heartfelt, decisions. I mean, Dan Pride of Godolphin, he canceled the winner's circle, and he just was like, because our game is tough. I mean, to see the next race, you just half an hour later you run the next race, and a half an hour later you run the next race, and then you come out in the morning and the horses, you see the horses galloping and breezing, and we know we have to go on because with our sport you can't. I mean, you can't stop because the horses. I mean, if you. They always say, you know, you get a rainy day in Saratoga. It's not just training them on that rainy day. Do you want to give them the day off because the track might be unsuitable? Well, then they get fresher, and then they might do more the next day. So, you know, you're always walking this balance with these horses. And to see the sport go on, it does take you aback a little. So I was touched. I wasn't surprised. I was touched by everybody. I mean, the people, Dan Pride and Brendan Walsh and Tyler Gaffione, and they were the ones kind of at the front of it. But I think man to man, woman to woman, kid to kid in their sport, everybody kind of rose to the occasion. And again, I think the sport was fortunate that it was Brendan Walsh who would be as open and honest. And I mean, he never, like, I mean, I was sitting there with my, I mean, it's kind of crass when you're in that moment, but I got my tape recorder running, and they're just in this moment, and he's talking, and in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, is he going to be okay if I use all this? And even when I wrote it the next day, I kind of was like, I hope he's okay with me writing that. I hope he's okay with what I said. I hope he's okay. And late that the next morning, he was in his golf cart going one way, and I was going the other. There's nobody else around. He kind of saw me, and I saw him. We both stopped, and he just, you know, I don't even know what he said. He just, you know, we just shared another moment. He was thankful that I think the two of us were glad that that each one of us was there for each other and for the sport. And that's, you know, again, I don't glamorize being a turf rider. Again, it's, but there are moments where it takes on a little bit more of a importance than other days.
Good job on the recap. And some of the other regulars up in the press box also did nice recaps that were able to kind of balance, you know, recognizing the winner, but certainly recognizing it was a tough day. And also your cover recognized both aspects, looking at White Abario, but saying gray day, which I think kind of stated the overall aspect was on the day, but you also have to recognize it was a great performance by White Abario. You know, lifetime best performance, you know, whatever it was an hour later or whatnot.
Yeah, it was interesting. Joe, my brother, he was at home doing it. He was sick, so he was doing the paper from home, and I hadn't seen the cover, you know. So the next day, I mean, it came special, strange. You're like, I've never been a reader of the special, and occasionally I become a reader of the special, and I walked in kind of still. I was so... I think it was just so draining the day before. I was in a little bit of a fog the next morning trying to walk in there, and I just saw the paper, and I saw gray day, and I had no idea that was the headline that he chose. I thought, wow, that was just, it was a really appropriate kind of to encapsulate, to, with two words to kind of encapsulate the day for everybody.
I'll also tout today's paper. Your column in today's paper is, was kind of thought-provoking for me, having been around the game so long. You were talking with some regulars in the game and just talking about what are maybe some of the things to think about to make the game safer. We had Tom Rooney in here from the NTRA on Sunday. Steve Bick and I, we were talking about, you know, the game and kind of how do we address situations like that with folks who maybe aren't familiar with the game. Tom mentioned having talked to somebody recently about wearable technology that maybe will make things much safer for horses in the future. But your column really brought up some points, a lot of things that when you mentioned them, I thought that's kind of obvious, but I'd never thought of before.
Yeah, I mean, no, I mean, I think we've got, I was talking to Tom Law this morning about the column a little bit and about the sport, and I don't think we have to concentrate on the fixable things, on the tangible things that we can address and we can try to improve. And I think that's really important. We get down to kind of going, we get off trying to, I mean, I'm sad, I mean, frankly, look, Jason Service's horse never failed a drug test. And I mean, that's how far away we are from actually stopping that type of cheating and that type of doping. His horse has never failed a drug test. Now, so that's a great, I mean, obviously we need to try to catch those, the habitual cheaters and the people in our sport that we need to rid the sport of. But that's obviously a difficult assignment. Just like, I mean, you think back Lance Armstrong, those guys. I mean, Lance Armstrong never failed a test. It took other people to basically, to bring the situation to light. So I do think we have to concentrate on fixable things. And we've gotten we get so far in a rut. I mean, our poor horses go left every day of their lives. They gallop left, they race left, they walk left. I mean, just little things like that. And if you could create, you know, concentrating on our training facilities. And this, Saratoga's done an amazing job. The turf course at Oklahoma is off the charts compared, safety-wise, compared to 5 years ago, 10 years ago. The widening of the Oklahoma, the drainage on the Oklahoma, they have done an amazing job up here. But I think we have to concentrate on our training facilities. You know, if you go around the world, America's got as poor training facilities as any developed country. And that's not necessarily our fault. It's mostly geographical where we're training at the racetrack. But I think that's something. The races we ride, I mean, the optional claimer to me is it was designed for full fields, designed for the better, designed to increase handle on that. And I understand that. That's important. But the optional claimer has destroyed the ability to develop a horse. You get a horse in a two other than in this country, and they've won two races, maybe run five or six times in their lives. They're going against 8, 9, 10-year-old claimers that have won 500,000, that have won state bred stakes, that have done everything in this world. It's just, you can't develop a horse. I understand we won full fields, but the racing office, and they are directed by race by management for full fields, but the racing office won't let, if they ran it as just a straight non-winners of three, they get eight horses. They write it as an optional claimer, two other than maiden starter, claimer, state bred, optional, all this. Then they get 12.
Yeah.
And the next four that are in there are killers. Yeah. I mean, they are, and that lends itself, and a lot of them are trained by trainers who are claiming trainers that you can't claim off them because you're scared of them. So we have so many of our things in our sport, they're not designed to help the horse. And the way we're raising them now, the way we're developing them has changed. You have to take a step back and look at it and say, wait a minute, is this the right way we should be handling this? I just think it's so important. And again, concentrate on things we can fix. We know what's wrong. We gotta concentrate on those, and I think that will make a big difference.
Yeah, and again, I'll tout that column. That was in today's paper. And again, pick it up around town, pick it up over at the track, or thisishorseracing.com. If you're not, you know, in the Saratoga area, you can always catch it there as well. Get the handicappers, a couple of your hands. Chapazian's got a little competition with Bedard.
Charles Bedard.
They have both left me in the
there. Charles Bedard is crushing him. He's on a real roll.
And the selections are available every day on the website.
Yeah.
So what's the schedule for the paper?
So now we just finished our sixth in a row through sales week, and now we're back to Wednesday, Saturday. Starting so with next issue Saturday, then we'll do Wednesday and Saturday the rest of the meet, online picks and other features on our website. This is Horse Racing, so you can catch it in between.
And before we let you go, I had to pull up going back to last week's steeplechase. Normally, I would have you handicap a steeplechase race, but today's got canceled. But I'm perfectly happy to go back to last week because River D, in conjunction with Marshall Graham, I love that. You and Marshall in on Awaken, who was a good second behind McTeague last week. McTeague's going to be the number seven, but Awaken, your horse winds up running second. McTeague, the seven, wins the race. You're the number one running second. Give us your thoughts coming out of the race on Awaken.
Oh, I was proud of him. He's a real – he tries hard. You can see him here. He's you basically say he's beaten. He's still digging in and trying. He gets his legs going. He's working on it, trying to get there. Cool horse. I love this horse. I bought him off of Shug McGee and Phipps Stable. I actually watched him run an Ellis Park Maiden up here 2 years ago. It was like, that's a jumper, and eventually got him. The winner was better. The winner was always going better than he was the whole way. I was kind of watching it going, McTeague's just traveling a little better than we are. But gallant performance. I'm very proud of him. No jump race today. I just got to say, I didn't mean to come on here and get on my soapbox about issues of the sport.
I teed you up. After the weekend.
I don't want to be just the guy that's just ranting and raving. I do think we all have to get together and try to make some improvements and address the things that we can address and that we can improve.
I'm right with you. As I say, I teed you up for that because I thought the test article was very good. And as I say, a nice balance there. But the article, again, being a longtime fan, I read some of the things and thought, that's kind of obvious, but I'd never thought of it from that way. Condition book, the training facilities and whatnot. So I will tout that as worth a look. Sean, as always, we appreciate the visit. And we'll be talking steeplechase, obviously, going forward, just not today. But River D, have any other runners
I'd like to bring Awaken back up. And I got a few maidens going to Colonial Downs. But Awaken might come back for later in the meet. That'd be the only one now.
So we'll look for that as well. Good luck.
Thanks.
Thanks for coming in this morning.
Thank you.
All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, Nicole Russo, there were fireworks across the street last night and the night before. We'll talk about that right after this. Stay tuned.
Turn your love of racing into savings with equine discounts through the NTRA. Purchase through equine discounts and receive great savings on well-known brands like John Deere, Sherwin-Williams, Big Ass Fans, Farmers Insurance, and Office Depot. Join thousands of other equine members and support companies that give back to the sport we all love. Call 866-678-4289 or visit equinediscounts.com to start saving today.
Sometimes it pays to go with the flow, to check your worries at the door, to reconnect with your crew, to follow the thrills and the flavor, to roll with it and see where it takes you, to enjoy every minute to its fullest, and to dance like there's no tomorrow. You can do that here at Rivers Casino and Resort Schenectady, where the good times flow.
No matter where in the world you are, the excitement of wagering on horse racing is just a click away. You'll get live streaming, past performances, race replays, our virtual tote board, analysis and selections from professional handicappers, a simple, safe, and secure wagering platform, and best of all, you get track prices. CapitalOTBBet.com. Bet any place, anytime at CapitalOTBBet.com. And be sure to download our new mobile app from the iTunes Store or Google Play.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. Yes, there is plenty of gambling over on the front side, but I was saying to people Monday and Tuesday night, the real gambling happens down the street at the Facing Tipton Pavilion as they spend the big bucks on the unraced yearlings. And there were some fireworks the last couple of nights. So who better to talk to than our friend Nicole Russo, who covers the breeding side of the game for the Daily Racing Form. Nicole, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. I think that's a really interesting way to talk about it in terms of gambling. I always tell people that this is like, you know, this is a little bit like the draft, and it's not even, as you pointed out, these are unraced horses. So it's not the two-year-old sales where they have the Breeze Show, which is like, you know, the NFL Combine. This is, you know, you're drafting, you know, a kind of a JV player who hasn't really, you know, doesn't have a record to speak of.
Let me ask you on that idea, because you can look at the breeding, and these guys go over, and I talk to bloodstock agents and whatnot, and they always say, you know, you go over, you look for the confirmation and whatnot, you look for mental. So they're looking at the horses, and they're assessing and whatnot. Do you get a good feel? Do you get a buzz from the people and looking at the book and have a pretty good idea of who the top prices are going to be, or do you get surprised?
Sometimes, you know, it's a bit of both. I think, you know, with the two top prices from last night, I think are a good example of that, at least as far as I'm concerned. Certainly, you know, Curlin and Beholders, Colt, you could see coming a mile away. You see that page, you know it's a stallion's pedigree, and you just, you know, we as journalists are not privy to, you know, the vet work that the bloodstock agents and the buyers are doing. So, you know, you don't have a feel for that aspect of it, but, you know, you have a pretty good idea that, okay, if everything checks the boxes with this horse. But then you have a horse like, you know, the Into Mischief Colt, where, you know, beautiful page on paper, very nice looking horse, which, you know, can be said of every horse in this catalog. I mean, it is the selected yearling sale. They have to bring that to the table, you know, but then the horse gets in the ring and just kind of the right parties hook up on him and, you know, pushes it all the way to the wire like that. So, I think it's a bit of both in answer to your question.
Yeah, interesting. I often ask people also, you know, I think the auction mentality gets going every once in a while where it's maybe not anticipated, but then you get a couple who are fighting it out there, and that juices things up nicely, certainly. Let's talk a little bit about a couple of the top prices from both of the first couple of nights. First, we'll look at, I pulled up some video of hip number 77. And again, there were 10 overall seven-figure horses, is that right?
Yes, two on Monday's opening session and eight in the Tuesday session.
And then the fireworks last night. But 77 Quality Road out of I'm a Looker. And we're going to look at this one pulling in $1.1 million. Talk about Monday night and this horse.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting that Ammo Racing, which has become, you know, such a big name in international racing with horses like King of Steel and the Norfolk upset winner, whose name I'm blanking on. Yeah. I'm so sorry, guys. But, you know, they've really had success coming over here and buying, you know, Kentucky Bred Yearlings in the United States and then bringing them over to Europe to run. But they do have U.S.-based runners, including this year's Gulfstream Oaks winner, Affirmative Lady. And eventually they want to run this horse in the U.S.
Okay.
First he's going to go over to Ireland for his breaking and pre-training, which they said is their program. But then he'll come back over here eventually to race, which certainly this is an American dirt-type, classic-type pedigree. So, you know, not a surprise, but, you know, they're really a growing operation, making a footprint on both sides of the Atlantic.
And again, 1.1 million, so kind of kicks off the seven-figure numbers going back to Monday night. And I will tell people, if you're in the backyard, it's a lot of fun, or if you walk through the building, it's a lot of fun as these horses get up to that seven figures. The energy gets going. If you didn't get a chance to go Monday or Tuesday, the New York Bred sale is coming up as well, and that's become a lot of fun also.
That sale is creeping closer and closer to producing a seven-figure horse one of these days. I mean, just last year you saw a $700,000 horse top the sale, who isn't even the top price horse in the sale's history. And when you look at how New York Breds are running around the world, and when you look at the purse incentives that are here, you know, at Saratoga this summer is a good example for New York Breds. You've got to think, you know, one of these years, that upper end of the market is going to break through there. It's coming.
And again, it's become a fun sale in and of itself. Nice big crowd over there. So if you miss Monday and Tuesday, you can swing there. But again, going back to Monday, another over $1 million, $1.05 million for hip number 87. Looking at the book here. By Curlin out of Lady TNT, a lot of black type on the page.
A lot of black type on the page, and I think, you know, you love to see that with a filly because, you know, going back to, we talked about the vet work. I think people are generally more accepting of whatever vet work, not to imply anything about any of these horses, just as a general statement. People are more accepting of the vet work of fillies at sales like this than they are of colts, because a colt has to go out and prove himself on the racetrack to become a stallion. But a filly, you point out all that black type on the page, and she'll never lose that regardless of what she does on the track. That being said, this is a, you know, big, well put together, sprinter type looking filly who looks like she has a lot of speed. There was speed on, you know, the female side of the family as well. Curlin, the sire of a champion sprinter and elite power, and this filly is kind of, you know, shaped in that mold.
Yeah, and again, so there was 2 7-figure horses on Monday night. Tuesday night, things went, and it was anticipated. Hip number 165 mm-hmm. by Curlin out of Beholder. I think we all know how good Beholder was, and again, the buzz was going into the sale that this horse was going to attract a lot of attention, and did, at $4 million. I was talking to some folks upstairs last night who had been standing there while Mr. Baffert, Mr. Zadon were making their bids right from just outside the party mm-hmm. room, for lack of a better term, there upstairs, and they wind up getting $4 million, going for $4 million for this, again, offspring of Curlin and Beholder.
And just, you know, I think a lot of the major players were in on this horse. We could hear people bidding, you know, from the back ring, from several points within the pavilion. And there were some bids coming in online as well, so some parties off-site as well. And, you know, when you talk about these prices, people will look at a horse and go, oh, what are the odds that they earn back $4 million on the racetrack? But when you're looking at these sale prices, it's not just about that. If you're buying, you know, a colt, of course, you're looking ahead to potentially a stallion career. If you're buying a filly at these prices, you're thinking, oh, you know, I can sell some yearlings out of her down the line maybe, and she could be a valuable broodmare. And this colt, in addition to just the beautiful racing record, obviously, of, you know, both of his parents, you know, he's bred to be a stallion. Curlin has had 2 sons in a row sire the winner of the Kentucky Derby in their first crop. Beholder, in addition to all of her accomplishments, she's only a half-sister to the nation's, you know, 4-time reigning leading sire Into Mischief. So if this colt delivers on the racetrack, you know, you would expect him to be a valuable stallion prospect.
Yeah, and so $4 million. And then you alluded to it, maybe not expected, and I'm just looking how close to – we were 7 horses
pretty
from
close
the end.
To, yeah.
And so if, don't leave early is, the, is I think, the message here, because number 228 by Into Mischief out of All-American Dream. And I was, since it's the end of the sale, I was on the back there, and I'm just happily talking to some people, and I look up, and, oh, we're over $1 million. Oh, and then the interest attracted me, $3.2 million.
And this colt, I think, was really interesting because I think when you come into the Saratoga sale, you know, we've discussed it's a selected sale. You have to have the pedigree. You have to have the confirmation. But you also have to have some intangibles, you know, because these horses – it's a smaller catalog. Buyers not only have the time to see, you know, almost every horse in the catalog if they want to, but to see a horse multiple times. You're showing for several days. You know, it's a social atmosphere. And, you know, consigner Zach Madden of Buckland Sales, I think, put it very well to me recently. You have to make a good first impression over and over and over again. And Donato Lanny talked about this horse's personality and said he was so cool. Every time I went by the barn, he was out showing for somebody, and he just never did anything wrong. So I think, you know, the intangibles might have been a big part in this horse, because that is something that, you know, can help a horse stand out among all of these, you know, beautifully pedigreed, beautifully put together individuals.
And again, 10 horses, 7 figures, above 7 figures. So overall, the sale, how were the numbers?
My gosh, you know, I mean, last year, the sale set records across the board, and I think anybody, you know, would have been realistic to say, hey, this sale has a high bar to clear. Pretty much, you know, down a little on average and gross, but pretty much on par with last year's figures at the end of night one. You had to feel pretty encouraged, especially knowing what pages were there for night two. And then last year, just the sale blew it out of the water. A record gross, a record average, finished on par with the record median. The buyback rate up a little bit, but it is a selective marketplace on both ends. If you're spending that kind of money, you're looking for a horse who ticks all of your boxes. And if you're a breeder and you're bringing, you know, prime horses to this arena, you're not willing to accept less than what you think your perceived value of them is. You say, no, I'm going to hang on to this horse. And, you know, higher end breeders often have the, you know, discretion to do that. You know, they, you know, they're in a comfortable position to do that. So I don't think it's a surprise when we see the buyback rate up in this market, but all of the other figures, very, very encouraging. I would have to think you've got to be encouraged looking ahead to the other, you know, selected and preferred sales in the upper end of this marketplace this year.
And they also sold what, a share to Not This Time. Have they ever done that before?
Not that I can recall at this sale, but it has become common, you know, to do that in the public arena. Last year at Phasic Tipped in July, a sale in the Exciting Young Stallion Gervin was auctioned off there. And, of course, everybody remembers at Keeneland November the share to Flight Line. So I think that's, you know, it's becoming a thing that we're, you know, it used to be a very common thing in, you know, I think the 70s and 80s before my time, and then kind of phased out a little. And now in recent years, you know, we've seen a good handful of them. So I think it's, you know, it's always something that's kind of interesting, especially with Not This Time. They point out, you know, he's a younger stallion. Yeah. You have a lot of upside on this share.
Yeah.
So I think it's interesting to see that being done with these younger sires.
And it's right there, a nice price, too. If you didn't get a chance, it's always a lot of fun, the sales. The New York Bred sale comes up Sunday and Monday, so keep that in mind. Nicole, we always appreciate the visit and the coverage. I've known Nicole since she was over at the Saratoga. Now you're based in Kentucky, right?
Yes.
You like it down there?
Yeah. It's horse country. It's lovely. You know, I mean, it's, you know, I tell people when I'm driving, you know, to the, I ride an off the track thoroughbred, and when I'm driving to the barn to see my horse, I'm driving past, you know, Don Alberto, I'm driving past Timbertown, and it's just, you know, it's, you know, I work in this sport as a business, but I'm also, you know, still that little girl who, you know, grew up reading The Black Stallion, is just thinking, you know, my God, I get to be surrounded by these animals all day.
And again, you do a great job, have it all your stops along the career, but now at the Daily Racing Forum, covering the breeding side of the game and more. So again, if you want to get some more info on what happened the last couple of nights, you can check out the Daily Racing Forum or DRF.com. Nicole, appreciate the visit.
Thanks for having me.
All right. We'll take a break. When we come back, Jennifer Kelly will join us. She's written Sir Barton. She's written The Foxes of Bel-Air, Omaha, and Gallant Fox, and more. We'll talk all about that when we come back. Stay tuned.
Just watch the races when you can be in the middle of the action. For nearly 20 years, Bonaventure Stables' share-based ownership program has made thoroughbred ownership affordable for the everyday fan. Ownerships of 5 and 10% are now available on a nice selection of horses. As a partial owner with Bonaventure Stables, you'll enjoy all the benefits afforded every owner. Visit with your horse in the private stable area. Greet the trainers and jockeys in the paddock. And when your horse wins, savor the moment in the winner's circle at Saratoga, Belmont, Aqueduct, or wherever you bring home the prize. Based in historic Saratoga Springs, Bonaventure Stables has been training winners and creating memories since 2005. Learn more, see available horses, and meet our team at bonaventurestables.com.
Welcome back to Racing Across America on a beautiful Wednesday morning here on the backstretch. Always love coming up here to Saratoga in the summertime, being on the backstretch. The horses were working out behind us. The leaf blower was across the street. So it's a little bit of everything going on here. Speaking of a little bit of everything, happy to be joined now by our friend Jennifer Kelly, author of the Sir Barton book, also The Foxes of Bel-Air, which you see right here. We'll talk about both of those and more. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Very good.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for the opportunity.
Well, talk a little bit about how it has been, because I saw you up in the press box, about a week ago you got into town. I said, come over and be on TV, but how's the Saratoga visit going?
It's going great. I've actually been here longer than I had the first time, and so I've gotten to take it all in. I went to the sale and, you know, did racing Friday, Saturday, and been to the museum and I've eaten all the food and I think I'm set. So when we leave tomorrow, I think I'm good. I've gotten my Saratoga fill so far.
Again, the Sir Barton book and Foxes of Bel-Air, we'll talk about those specifically in a moment, but talk a little bit about how'd you become an author, but then how did horse racing become a topic?
Well, for me, it started in fifth grade. I had a teacher who read The Black Stallion in my class, and she said her teacher had done the same thing, so she read it to us. And then, of course, you know, being 10 years old, I would get an allowance. I begged my parents to take me to the store to get the next book and the next book and the next book. And that was about the time that video stores became a thing, so we'd go rent the movie. And my parents got so tired of it, they finally bought me the movie. But then a couple of years later, the Birmingham Race Course, because I grew up in Birmingham, Alabama, my aunt took me to the Birmingham Race Course, and I was done. I was sold. Like, I fell in love with the sport. And that was right about the time Sunday Silence and Easy Goer were a thing, and I was done. So, but that, I was just a fan for the longest time. So this is still kind of new to me, but it's been a lot of fun, this process of...
Yeah, people might have forgotten, but Birmingham had a
racetrack for all of 5 seconds,
yeah,
yes.
But then again, so you became an author, but you were already kind of a horse fan
since I was 10 years old and read all the books and watched as many shows as I could and, you know, watched Wild World of Sports every weekend when they have horse racing on. And but, you know, this was something, I have an academic background. I taught for a long time, so this was kind of a natural extension of that. But instead of writing about, you know, some literature, I got to write about horse racing.
Well, and talk about what was the impetus for writing the Sir Barton book, and talk a little bit about the topic.
I have always been intrigued by Sir Barton, and I had a really crappy day at work one day. And my husband said, "What would you be doing if you weren't teaching?" And I said, "Well, I would love to go back to writing," because I had stopped writing for myself. And I pitched him some ideas, and Sir Barton was one of them. And so he said, "Well, why don't you see if somebody else has done this?" And I learned that no one had. And so I just decided to pick up the mantle and run with it, with all the hubris of someone who thinks that they can write a whole book about a Triple Crown winner that's never been done before. Like, I was like, yeah, sure, why not do that? And, you know, 4 years later, there's a book.
Let me ask you this. I'm sure there's a lot of research involved. What was the most interesting thing you found out about Sir Barton?
See, if I tell you, then maybe people won't pick up the book and read it.
Well, give us the overview of the story, at least.
Well, I always felt like everyone said he was kind of cranky and not really personable. And so the biggest thing I wanted to find out was really what kind of personality he had. And I feel like he was a very serious, you know, athlete. And he was way smarter than the humans around him. And so that made him, you know, kind of challenging to deal with. Yeah. And also his trainer, H.G. Bedwell, anytime the horse took his head out of the stall, would slap him on the muzzle. So I think that made Sir Barton tend to want to grab at people as they walked by, because he was expecting that. So it was just fun to find out those little personal details about him beyond just, you know, he won this race and race against Man of War and all this.
And overall, for people who aren't familiar, what kind of a career did he have, start to finish?
31 starts, you know, was one of the leading money winners, won the Derby, Preakness, and the Belmont, obviously. Won the Saratoga Handicap in track record time, 2:01 and 4/5, which was rare to have a sub, you know, 2:02, like a mile and a quarter in 1919. Man of War broke that, or tied that record 2 weeks later in the Traverse. I mean, they were like right there together. He didn't win the Dwyer. He won the Withers in between winning the Preakness and the Belmont.
So was he the impetus for the Triple Crown?
He got people's attention. So once people saw how much money there was to be won taking that path, then it became something that people paid attention to. And so you see it throughout the 20s that there's this, you know, lean toward making these races the most valuable of all the three-year-old races in the spring. And then over that decade, it develops and starts picking up that cachet of, this is the American Triple Crown, just like the British Triple Crown. But it doesn't really catch on until Gallant Fox. But it was called Triple Crown before Charles Hatton did it. Okay. So if everyone has heard the story that Charles Hatton did it, it was not him. There were other people that used that name before he did.
Is that in the book?
It's in here. It's in Foxes.
Oh, okay.
And it's also in the article I wrote for the May Blood Horse.
Ah, okay. So. And let's talk about the Foxes of Bel Air, a little bit about Gallen Fox in Omaha, the first father and son team to get it done, and talk about the impetus for writing this book.
Well, it seemed like a natural progression when you write about the first one, and then you notice that the second and third don't have a book, that you just kind of go, okay, well, let's do that one. So while I was promoting Sir Barton, I actually went and started doing the research for this one, and you know, found out that not only did they not have a book, that William Woodward does not have a book, which is something people have asked me, you should write a book on William Woodward. Okay, maybe one day. But this was a whole, you know, part of horse racing history in the 1930s that really hadn't been explored in depth, and that's what I wanted to do, because William Woodward and Bel Air was, in the 30s, what Calumet became in the 40s and 50s. It was that dominant racing, breeding operation. So he kind of paved the way for Calumet to do what they did, too.
And again, a very unique story because of the unique situation with Gallen Fox and Omaha being the father and son.
I know, it's so improbable now. And I think, you know, looking at Pharaoh and Justify, there are best opportunities to maybe do it again. But, I mean, you know how the odds are just so stacked against them. But Gallen Fox and his first crop turned out Omaha. And it's just such an improbable story to have two horses from the same breeder, the same owner, and the same trainer within 5 years of each other win a triple crown. It's just, you can't make it up.
Sir Barton, the Foxes of Bel Air. Yes. I looked last night. People can find it online, the usual spots. Do you know, if folks are up here, do you know downtown, North Shore, maybe?
Okay, so I have an intimate knowledge of what's in stock because I've been in those bookstores recently. So if you go to the National Museum of Racing, they have a couple of copies of Sir Barton right now, which if you pick them up off the shelf, you might get a little surprise in them.
Oh,
and
nice.
Then they were out of Foxes last time I checked. And then at North Shire, there's a few signed copies. So if you're in town, you want to go to North Shire, they have a few. And then I know Impressions has some at WOW. So I really hope you guys will go and visit Impressions and North Shire and give them your biz. I think North Shire is also rounding up this month. Like, rent their charity is the Kim Weir and all them that you're about to talk to.
All right.
So go buy North Shire, buy some books.
Well, Impressions and Dark Horse sponsor our Dark Horse Play of the Day, and the Dark Horse Play of the Day with them, the charity goes to TRF as well. So if you go down to any of the spots downtown, it all benefits. And just before we let you go, I have two things.
Yes.
First of all, you said a four-year project. When you write a book, what does go into that, and how long does it take?
Well, for me, I have to do a book proposal first because I have to be under contract to write the book. So I will craft a book proposal that'll give me an outline of what the book is going to look like, at least in theory, and then I, you know, submit that to a publisher, and then they will put me under contract. So I've been very lucky. The University Press of Kentucky has been my publisher for all my books thus far. They're a wonderful resource for horse racing books, and we are expanding our catalog, you know, year by year. And then after that, I have an outline. And the nice thing about doing a biography is it's sort of an automatic outline, born, lived, died. And so it makes it easy. And then you just kind of fill in the gaps in between. Okay, well, we know he raced this many times, and you can, and then you got to fill in between it. So it's a lot of research. It's trips to the Keeneland Library, you know, museum is very helpful too, a lot of online archives. And this one only took about 2.5 years, whereas the first one took a lot longer, mostly because I didn't know what I was doing.
I was going to say, does experience count? I guess it does. And I was also going to ask about travel, because you still are based in Alabama, so you have to go to Keeneland or jump around.
Yeah, I have a very nice spouse.
I know when we were talking, you said you have another project in mind. Can you divulge, or is it?
I'm going to keep that one to myself for now.
It will be
Triple Crown related.
All right.
And so I'm still in that vein. Don't worry. But I'm keeping it under my hat for the time being.
That's fair.
And like waiting for the right moment to talk about it more. So that's, I'm very excited about it, though. I can't wait.
That's fair. But Foxes of Bel Air and Sir Barton are out and available. As I say, you can find them online. I looked last night. And you can find them online. But as mentioned, you can catch downtown or at the museum as well. Jennifer, really appreciate your stopping in. Good work on the books, and we look forward to the future work.
Thank you. I look forward to watching more Seth Mirro, too. I can't wait.
I appreciate that. Thanks, Jennifer. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, Keith Augustine and Kim Weir are in the house. We're going to talk a little Lazy Dog Cookie, but also their horse treats, which benefit the TRF. All of that when Racing Across America continues. Stay tuned.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
The Clubhouse Racebook is the Capital Region's new home for racing and sports. 25,000 square feet of Vegas-style action with live wagering on the best horse racing from around the world. 260 flat-screen televisions and state-of-the-art wagering terminals. So don't miss out. The fun is only minutes away at 711 Central Avenue, Albany, just off exit 5 of I-90. And don't forget, if you can't make it to the clubhouse, you can always wager online 24/7 at CapitalOTV.com.
Come on.
I want sales reports on my desk by Monday.
Whoops. My bad.
Love racing? RTN brings you every live simulcast on your home television, plus live video streaming and race replays on your PC and mobile devices. To order, visit RTN.tv. RTN, a breed apart.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. They made kind of a ghost visit a couple of weeks ago to the Handicappers Department, never appearing on camera, but I think you saw maybe hands come in with some of the horse biscuits. But we have them live here to talk a little bit more about it. Keith Augustine, Kim Weir, Keith and his wife Amy run Lazy Dog Cookie Company with the pet treats, but they've now gone over to do horse treats as well. So we'll talk a little bit about that. A few horse owners out there want some horse treats. And they benefit the TRF. So we have Kim in as well to talk a little bit about that side of things. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Hey, great to be here.
Very good. Happy to have you here. And Keith, why don't we say, first of all, I since your wife Amy isn't here, I did pull up a picture of her from the internet so we could dutifully and rightfully recognize her, as she is one of the founding members, obviously, of the company. But talk a little bit about you and Amy and how the Lazy Dog Cookie Company got started.
Well, that's a great picture.
It is
that
a great
is
picture.
Awesome picture.
Yeah. Lucy and Hazel, two of our pack. So, yeah, so Lazy Dog started in 2001. My wife Amy started the company. And at the time, I worked for Heinz Ketchup. And she literally started dog treat business in the garage of our house. Oven, mixer, packing area, UPS deliveries, bakery deliveries, all coming to the garage of our house. It was quite an endeavor. A lot of fun. And then we ended up moving here in Saratoga in 2005. And 2 years later, I quit my job with Heinz and joined Amy in the dog treat business, which was a big shocker to family and friends, to say the least. You know, you're gonna sell dog cookies. And, you know, we started out over in Boston Spa and spent the last number of years there. And we're really excited last year to be able to finally move in and find some space in Saratoga. So now we're on Washington Ave in Saratoga. Lots of great local customers that support our brand, and you know, cookies, pretty much all over the United States and Canada now. So we've been really fortunate and meet lots of great people. And just a couple of years ago, Amy and I decided to attend the TRF barbecue over at the Saratoga Winery, and we ended up meeting Kim. And you know how Kim is. She's so excited. And she's like, oh, we got to get to know you guys and Lazy Dog, and what can we do? So last summer, she invites us over to the backstretch, and Amy and I love animals and horses. And we're like, how could we do something together? And at the time, we had this product, which is called Operation Drool Overload, which is a collaboration we do with Dogs on Deployment. It's a military foster organization based in California, and we give about 20% of the proceeds back to that organization.
Great
program. We've been doing it for about 8 years. So last summer, we're at the backstretch, and we start talking, why can't we do this type of program for horses? So after a lot of research, consulting a lot of experts, trying to come up with a recipe, packaging, everything we had to do, because we never made horse treats before, and here we are.
There it is.
Just a year later, horse biscuits, packaging all designed by my wife, Amy, which came out phenomenal. This was our first flavor, cherry vanilla, which has been really well received. Great local partners, Cheshire Horse, Impressions, all the Benson stores. We're on Chewy.com, and it's just been a great program. And we're actually going, we have plans now to expand. We're going to do 2 or 3 additional flavors, hopefully, by like probably February or March of next year.
Well, yeah. Kim, talk a little bit about that. I mean, it benefits TRF, the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. Of course, we've had Kim on the show many times talking about the TRF, which does great work for the retired racehorses. But fill us in on how you pulled the team in.
Oh, my gosh. Well, these are great folks. When we talk about those we want to celebrate and inspire, you are looking at him and Amy and the Lazy Dog team. It really was. It did really all start with the barbecue. This is not just a shameless plug. It actually is true. And it is actually due to our dear friend Fran LaBelle, who said to Keith and Amy, you've got to come to our barbecue. So they came, and I have learned that Amy is a big fan of silent auction items, much to our delight at the TRF. Yeah. Amy, in fact, won a particular item at the barbecue in 2021, and that was a handicapping session with JK, Jonathan Kinchin.
We should note Amy is the handicapper.
She is.
She's not here today. I was going to ask for a couple picks.
You're right about that.
Was the one. Yes, that was very cool. So Keith and Amy came. We decided to host that on my porch, which is only a couple blocks, and so they began their sort of in journey with us, thanks to JK, made a big role. And the follow-up to that was, I said, you know, have you been to the track? And they said, well, we come a couple times a year. We don't really know. I said, well, let's come to the backstretch, because that's where all the magic happens. It's also where Seth sits, so it's definitely the cool place to hang out. I remember that day like it was yesterday, because we walked in the gate here on Nelson Avenue, and I had never seen as many dogs on the backstretch. It was very sort of cosmic. I said, I don't normally notice dogs, but when you bring the dog treat people, all the dogs in Saratoga appeared on the backstretch. So we were having a lovely time visiting with them. And then my friend Mary Kaiser, who's a dear friend and who's a pony rider, she walked up on my beloved Kenny, and I started pulling out a peppermint to give Kenny, and Keith and Amy say, oh, so the horses like treats too? Oh. And that was the moment. That was when it all happened. That was awesome.
When you smell like dog treats, dogs tend to follow you around. So wherever we go, there's a pack of dogs
somehow show up. I have seen it happen. It is true.
Yeah.
Well, it was so cool. When they told me about the Operation Drool Overload bag, and they said, what if we came up with a horse treat? I mean, I always like to say, I say it to Seth all the time, my favorite word is yes. I love it when people say it to me, and I often say it to others. And they said, could we maybe do a dog treat or horse treat? I said, yes, let's do it. This product, the horse bit skit, which is very clever, you know, bit, see what we're doing there with the bit in the mouth? This is really what I call a little message in a bottle, because it's not only cool packaging, that's actually Forbidden Apple. He's one of our herd. He's one of the oldest horses in our herd. He lives in Ocala at our Second Chances program. That's actually him. And then the whole back of the bag, thanks to Amy and Keith, is a whole story of the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation and our Second Chances program. So everywhere these are sold, it's like the horses are being represented, and it's just so cool. I can't say enough about these guys. Thank you, Keith.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun, and we're really fortunate to partner up with TRF.
And you and your wife are fans of the sport as well, because I noted this when you guys were the ghost guests as well.
Yeah.
I played some basketball with Keith over at the Y. Keith, much, much better than I am.
Please.
30 years ago, no, 30 years ago, you still would have been better than me. I was pretty good. You still would have been better than me. But he'll come in after big race days and talk about how well Amy had done. So I'm sorry she isn't in here to give us a couple of picks.
Another time. We'll be delighted.
We'll get her over. But I pulled up, and we've shown some things so far, but I pulled up a little shop that has a few of your products. First, just talk about the dog treat products that you offer. And again, also pulled up the website address if people want to check that out, but where they can find them or go to the web to find them. But talk a little bit about the dog treats.
Yeah, so we do a full line of treats. We do soft baked cookies, which are our Montanello line, which have a great like roasted vanilla aroma. We do soft and chewy cookies, which are called pie slices. And then some crunchy biscuits, but we're best known for birthday items for dogs. So we do birthday cake bites, which are little cookies with sprinkles in them. We do a bake-at-home cake mix. We do a make-at-home ice cream mix with sprinkles in. And then our signature item that Amy created all the way back in 2004 is called Pup Pie. So we make the original Pup Pie for dogs. And we do a happy birthday for a boy dog, a girl dog. We do one for adoption. We do one for Valentine's Day, all kinds of seasons. So a lot of our business is centered around pets' birthdays. And we've been fortunate enough to have great customers support that line across the country. And I feel like when we started that back in 2004, it was really like a novel idea when we'd approach customers and be like, dog's birthdays, I don't know about that. I don't think that's going to sell in our store. But now, I mean, pretty much anywhere you go.
People love their pets.
They love their pets. Birthdays are an important time for owners to celebrate. It's a special moment. So, I think times have caught up to, the innovative products that Amy's created. So it's been a lot of fun.
And I also noticed on the website, it looks like it's a monthly thing, a party pack giveaway visit the website.
We just started that last month. So we're doing every month. You can enter on our website. It's completely free. And you give us some little bit of info on your dog, and then we do a drawing. You get a really nice happy birthday sign, multiple birthday items for your dog, a nice little party bone, and a party hat. So we just awarded our first party pack giveaway winner last week, and it's been very well received, and it's a lot of fun. I mean, to be honest, what's better than getting really cool, beautiful birthday pictures of people with their pets? I mean, it's just it's a fun business, and we meet really great people that are passionate about all animals.
Mm-hmm. And again, before we wrap up, just reiterate a little bit the horse biscuits and what went into developing that and where people can find that product.
So this, we had to do a lot of research. We never did anything for horses. So we did a lot of industry consulting. We had to develop a recipe from scratch. How much sugar, sugar shouldn't be in. I know horses love peppermint, so we went with cherry and vanilla peppermint. So the flavor's been very well received. I think the packaging is spot on. It looks great. We tell a great story. We're giving 20% of the proceeds back to the TRF, which we're really thrilled about. So it's just a great overall product, and it's really opened us up to a whole different market and just a lot of great people. So we're really excited about continuing this and expanding and coming out with more products that will continue to benefit the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. One that I just want to mention really quick that I'm really excited about, I mentioned we do a lot of stuff for birthdays for dogs, but I don't think there's anything for birthdays for horses. So our plan is to do, I think the name was Giddy Up Pup Pie or something along those lines. So we're talking about doing like a little pup pie that would be decorated with some crushed peppermint candies, which would be specific to celebrate horses' birthdays. So I think that's going to be a great product. We're excited about it. So again, we have great local partners. Cheshire Horse has the horse biscuits and Lazy Dog Treats. Impressions, you can go to all the Benson stores locally, do the horse biscuits and Lazy Dog. And we also have them available on Chewy.com.
Very good. And again, we've been showing the website. People can get to the website for more information as well. So just wanted to let you know you have a dog, the dog treats. But if you're a horse owner, check out the horse treats benefits, the TRF. And before we let folks go, tout the barbecue a little bit, because I just got an email the other day. Tickets going fast.
They are going fast. They went even faster after that email. So, yes, if you were, we're very grateful. And, in fact, I have to thank Keith and Amy, because Lazy Dog Cookie Company is one of our silver sponsors of our barbecue. So you will see Keith and Amy if you want to come meet them. Come to the barbecue. Another great reason to come. But, yes, there it is, August 22nd. So we're less than 2 weeks away. It is hopefully going to be a day just like today in Saratoga, a beautiful, we call it our summer nights barbecue at the barn, because it is such an outdoor setting. happening at the Saratoga Winery. And it's from 5 to 9 on August 22nd. We will be sold out, I would say, a good week in advance. So, like, now's the time. But we're expecting this to be our biggest and best event ever. It is our 40th anniversary, so we're just pulling out all the stops and looking forward to gathering our whole herd in all of its glory for a fun night of music and food and friends and raffle baskets. There will be a Lazy Dog cookie raffle basket, so another plug. Yep. And then, of course, a silent auction, which we've actually already got people putting in there, figuring out their proxies so that they can be in there for either the Richie dinner or the Dale Romans tour or the Pete Pornatel wine whiskey tasting. There's going to be a lot of fun stuff. So I always say I don't want to say I can't wait because I don't want it to get here too soon, but it's coming fast. So we hope to see everyone there.
And I will highly tout the barbecue. I've been a few times now. And it happens rain or shine. I'll note
that. Oh, yes.
Last year. Although last year was both.
It
rained
both.
A little bit, then it shined. And it was great the rest of
the night. We hit the all button on the weather last year. That's for sure.
The rest of the night. But the horse people show up and racing fans. It is a fun night. Benefits a great cause as well, the TRF. Kim Weir of the TRF. Keith Augustine of Lazy Dog Cookie Company. Appreciate the visit this morning.
And, thank you for having us.
We'll keep in touch.
Thank you, Seth.
Thank you.
Terrific.
All right, we're going to wrap it up for this edition of Racing Across America. Great day if you're headed up to the races. I guarantee you will enjoy it. It is a beautiful day. Don't forget, if you can't make it up, stop by the Clubhouse Racebook today. We will have the players' bankroll down there. That's going to be a lot of fun. Put your name in the hat, see if you can get on the bankroll team, make a little extra money. Don't forget, with the steeplechase canceled, first race post. The first race is actually race number 2, but post time is going to be at 1:46 today, so keep that in mind as well. Otherwise, we will wrap it up for this edition of Racing Across America. I'll be back in tomorrow at 9 a.m. for a handicapper support, 10 a.m. for the Thursday edition of Racing Across America. We'll see you then.
You've been watching Racing Across America. Racing Across America has been brought to you by Pennell's Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922. 284 Jefferson Street, Saratoga, just minutes from the track. And the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. When you can't make it to the track, make it to the Clubhouse Racebook.